The problem of human rights is usually dealt with by political scientists, economists, philosophers, but rarely by psychologists. And so I was very delighted to be invited to talk about the problem of human rights from a clinical standpoint of psychology. We know more or less what the standpoints of the political scientists are. He would say, I hope, that the human right is the right of every citizen to express himself freely without any fear of reprisals or even of indirect measures against him, and the right to participate actively in the process of decision-making. That's how a political scientist would define human rights in a democratic society. An economist would define human rights as a right of everybody to have a sufficient material basis to live a dignified human life. And there are some economists, in my opinion, unfortunately only a minority, who would say the unconditional right of everyone to have a sufficient material basis for a dignified life. That is to say that a man has the same right which a dog has to live and not to starve. And a philosopher would probably define the human rights, if he is a Kantian, in the sense of saying that the fundamental human right of man is to be an end of himself and not to be used as a means, not as a means by any other man, nor by any organization, including the sovereign state. But as a psychologist, we might ask, while all these definitions of human rights are correct, and even if they were all fulfilled, do they truly guarantee all human rights, especially if we stress human? That is to say, the right of each man to unfold as an individual and as a human being. Assuming, for example, that everybody has a right to voice his opinion, but what value has this right if he has no opinion? Or rather, if he is under the delusion of having opinions, when actually he's only repeating what the newspapers right for him. Or even if everybody were well fed, and in the world we are very far from this indeed, but can it not be that we would have a society of well-fed automatons, of things which operate as an appendix to the machines? And even if no man were exploited by any other man, that is to say, even if you are not made a means to the ends of another man, could you not be made a means to the state, to the economic system? Or could he not be made a means to his own ends, which are not human ends, to his own ambition, to his own greed? Or to put it differently, could it not be that man might exploit himself even though he is not exploited by other men? I believe that while the three human rights mentioned so far are necessary conditions of human rights, they are not sufficient conditions for what we call human rights. And one has to add another one, a condition which one could formulate in many ways. I would like to formulate it by saying it is a right to be oneself. And I believe that in this sphere of the right to be oneself, the clinician can make some contributions. Naturally, the question is, what does it mean to be oneself? And I should like to mention a few aspects of this problem as they seem to me essential. To be oneself, I would believe, in the first place means to be a person and not a thing. Of course, we are things in a physiological way only when we are corpses. But in a more subtle spiritual way, we can become things while we are still physiologically alive. We live indeed in a society, and by that I mean Western industrialized society, quite regardless of the political system, which creates a new type of man, a type of man whom one could call the homo consumens, the consumer man, the man for whom all things are articles of consumption, whether it is liquor and cigarettes, or books and lectures, or love and sex. Everything is an article of consumption. He becomes a consumer. And more than that, he devotes his life to producing things and consuming things. And in this process, he transforms himself into a thing. Philosophers of the 19th century have called this process sometimes reification, from Latin res and facere, to make oneself into a thing. Indeed, man has been called the homo faber, the producing man, and undoubtedly he is still that, although with the second industrial revolution, his method of producing has changed a great deal. He has been called the homo sapiens. Indeed, sometimes I have doubts whether that definition still is true. Because by homo sapiens, I think one means an animal which uses his intelligence for the purpose of survival. If one sees that today men do not seem to use their intelligence for the purpose of survival, but rather for the preparation of mass destruction, then indeed one may have some doubts to what extent the definition of homo sapiens still is true. But what we see in industrialized society is that aside from being homo faber, aside from still being homo sapiens, hopefully, man has become a homo consumens, and he has become, or is becoming, more and more a thing. Now, the clinical problem here is to study this process of reification. This process of a person who has the illusion of being a person, and yet is really not much more than what you might call a mechanism. These are indeed, this is a subject matter for intense psychological investigation. This is not a philosophical matter only, or a social matter, or a religious matter. This is something which one can study with the present methods of psychology and psychiatry in a very empirical, clinical way. And I suggest that it should be studied because it is one of the most important problems which go on in the modern world. Another aspect of saying what is it to be oneself would be to say perhaps it is to overcome the tremendous alienation which exists in modern man, the alienation from one's work, from one's fellow man, and from oneself. The word alienation has already become quite popular in the last few years. So many of you are familiar with the term which goes back to Hegel, and in fact it goes back earlier. But I should like, for those who are not familiar with it, to define it in as brief a way as possible. I hope at the same time somewhat understandably. By alienation, one refers to the fact that a man does not experience his own powers, his power of thought, his power of love, as his own. That he transfers all these powers to something outside, to a leader, to the state, to society, to an organization.